Welcome in for another episode of Bare Bones. My name is Mason West, and I am joined, as always, by Danny Meehan. Danny, how are you doing?
I'm good, Mason. How about yourself, buddy?
Not too shabby. I think we were just talking about...
You kind of got glitchy there. I didn't hear you.
Oh, we're just talking about being tired, and now the glitchiness of this podcast is continuing to add to my tiredness.
This is what we call fatigue.
It's in that weird part of the draft season where it's not like there's not like nothing going on, but especially now that the Bears trade out of the first pick, it's just kind of like, let's just get to it. Like, the pro days mean almost nothing to me. Cool. You know, Richardson threw a hole into the roof. That's awesome and all, but like, I wanted people on teams.
It's also just the weird makeup things about prospects that you don't actually believe season to make certain teams think you believe a certain thing.
Yeah, exactly. But probably the most important thing we have to lead off with, and this is, I can't stress this enough, everyone listening, get ready. Nathan Peterman re-signed with the Bears earlier today, about 1 hour. I mean, he's back. Nathan Peterman is back.
Oh, for the love of God.
Danny, your reactions?
Woo.
Yeah, Camp Arm, right? I mean, he's been here. I was here last year. He knows the gist of the offense. And they like him in that scenario. Just throw the ball to the third string guys so that they can get good camp looks. That's it. But, you know, whatever.
That's just fantastic.
But actually, more important things, you know, Ryan Poles, Kevin Warren, and Eberflus as well. They all talked over at the owners' meetings. And there are some comments, some quotes that I thought were interesting. So I'm going to throw some at you and see what you think about them.
Sure.
So regarding David Montgomery, this is Ryan Poles. I would just kind of sum it up by saying players do have a choice, Poles said. I thought we communicated well. I thought we negotiated well. At the same time, you don't always know what's going on in the background, but I thought we did a good job. We were transparent. We were organized, and it didn't happen.
Sounds to me that they wanted him back, but at their price, and there really wasn't much budging on that. Whatever they decided he was worth, that's what he was worth.
I would agree with that. I like David Montgomery. I know there's a lot of advanced stats out there that might say otherwise, that he just shouldn't, that he's not a good running back. The intangibles he possesses, I always felt was very important to that locker room. And at the right price, I would have loved him back. But I know we talked about this when it broke, actually, live here on the podcast, when Deontay Foreman was signed. I also loved Deontay Foreman. You and I are running back guys, too, so it's very easy to fall in love with these running backs. Oh, yeah. But Deontay is a stick his foot in the ground, get going, forward at A to B kind of guy.
He's a sledgehammer.
Yeah, and it's just fun to watch that. And I like his comeback story, you know, from his injuries.
It's wild to believe. I think he was in that 2017 draft class, and he's only 27 now. Like, that's such a bizarre, like, wow, you're only 27 years old now.
It's so interesting because he's got some miles on him, obviously, just because of having the injury that he had. But at the same time, he kind of reserved some of that. He didn't have as much the beating and the bruising that he would have had.
And I want to say he only had one really heavy workload year at Texas, which was his final season.
Yeah, absolutely. So
where he ran for over 2,000 yards. People seem to forget.
Ran for over 2,000 yards, and he got paid less than Monty ended up getting paid. And honestly, I think he's going to fit this system pretty damn well.
You know, if you're asking my personal opinion, they're 100% going full committee. It's going to be Herbert. It's going to be Foreman. It's going to be Travis Homer and whoever they decide to draft.
A little comment from the chat here. John asked, does Foreman previous injuries worry you significantly for this year, Mason? No, it does not, actually. When you look at his, he had Achilles, and actually Achilles tends to rehab a bit easier, a bit quicker than some of the ACL, some of those that we're worried about. And he really hasn't had too many issues since then. And we actually saw, similar to how ACLs work, like that first year back, even though you're back, you're not truly. And that's why he bounced around a little bit. His story is really interesting, too. Did you know he actually, during that time period, he actually went and started, I think it was a trucking company with his dad. Mm-hmm. And then he almost didn't come back to the NFL, but then his dad mm-hmm. passed away and he had a promise. It's a really cool story.
Yeah, it's a really happy story in a way too, and despite his father passing away, because he's doing it in his father's memory. Mm-hmm. I think I've said it on this show before in regards to the ACL specifically. We really need to recalibrate what we think about it because of what Adrian Peterson did. He is a one of one mutant freak Wolverine, whatever he is, because he was out 7-8 months and he was back. And then went for 2,000 yards and I believe broke the single season rushing record or came close to that year. Like, that's not normal.
I've said it multiple times on the show. You're at about 75-80% 1 year after your ACL reconstruction surgery. You're not at 100% until 2 years. And as you said, Adrian Peterson just broke people's brains and people forget that. So, and again, Achilles is easier. So, I'm pretty happy with where he's at. Danny, another quote from Poles regarding Komet and having two tight ends. It keeps defenses on their heels, really, because you get two different types. You could roll with two tight ends. Cole is more than capable of running routes and making plays as well. So just keeping teams off balance with our personnel groups, that's really going to help us. And again, just to be explosive and make plays down the field.
I mean, it's kind of true. And if you really look at what Getsy was doing in Green Bay or what LaFleur was doing with Green Bay while he was there, they did run a lot of two tight end stuff with Tanyan and Mercedes Lewis. It's just something they do a lot of. So I'm sure it's in their bag. They just didn't really have a second tight end worth mentioning. And I'm not wondering if that's why they brought Tanyan in, because it's the learning curve is less steep. He's shown to be a productive tight end. Although I think he's another one coming off of a, didn't he have an ACL or an Achilles himself?
ACL as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So
well, that's why his numbers were a bit depressed last year.
Mm-hmm. So they might have gotten a guy who, yeah, it's cool he's from the area, but he was legitimately a productive football player prior to that injury.
Yeah, the year before that, he led the league in touchdowns from tight ends. So I think he had like 8 or 9 or something crazy like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also say, too, connect that to Justin. You know, he had some pretty gnarly seasons passing to tight ends back in college. Problem being, he's had pretty much Cole Kmet, who was finding his way, you know, the year before that. Last year, he finally found a little something. And then, you know, the rest of the tight ends, right? I mean, people are struggled to name the other tight ends on this team because they weren't good.
That's being nice, but yeah.
Another Poles quote regarding, as you just had alluded to, those Chicago-based players. I think when you have pride in your local team that you grew up watching, you knew what the club meant to the city and you saw some good times and some good players. I think you're a little bit more motivated to perform at a high level and also lead because you've seen guys do it at a high level before you. So I always like that aspect. I think it just means a little bit more.
I'm sure it's a bit of a pandering quote more than anything. And I'm sure it is in regards to Tanyan specifically because he is from the area. I don't know if they've signed another guy from the area. I know
there are a couple of Edwards also is from the
area. Oh yeah, TJ Edwards is mm-hmm. from Lake Zurich, right? So
yeah,
I guess so. And I really truly believe that Edwards was a discount because he was coming home. There's no way that guy should have been as cheap as he was, given how productive he's been the past couple of years.
Oh yeah, and I think there's a truth to an extent. I mean, I could imagine if I was going to put on Houston Texans colors and run out the tunnel for the first time versus I'm going to put on Chicago Bears colors and run out the tunnel. It's just going to hit different. It's going to feel different. You're mm-hmm. going to look up to the spot where you used to, maybe you watched a couple games as a kid. It is different. Now, is it like the deciding factor between two players who you're going to bring in? No, but
it's also like how cool it is. Cool is it? I know every so often the state playoffs go there and play on Soldier Field. Who's to say he didn't play on Soldier Field as a high school player? Like, I don't know how good the programs are in high school from the time he was there at Lake Zurich, but I mean, I'm assuming it's a possibility. Like,
let's flip gears a little bit to Warren. So he had a couple quotes as well that I thought were interesting. First one, that was a big part to be able to close on the land. That was a big step, Warren said at the meetings on Monday. That remains our main focus from a stadium development situation. There's a lot of work to be done. I mean, basically, when you close on land, that's really when the work begins. And so I'm looking forward to April 17th and still just been trying to transition, gather information, and stay up to speed.
I mean, it's interesting because it's just making the Arlington Heights thing more and more real, right? Like, I was always of the opinion the second that the rumor came out that they were interested in that land, that they were leaving Chicago. Like, it wasn't a matter of if, it was when and how they were going to get the deal done. And Warren, obviously, is well-versed in this. I think he was the COO of the – was his title in Minnesota when they were building the brand-new Viking Stadium. So he's obviously well-versed in this. He's got experience in what this has to do. I was just it's a waiting game and seeing what their plans are, what their scheduled, break ground date is, what their scheduled finish date is. It's all just a long waiting game. It's exciting, well, though.
And the part that I really took from it was that April 17th date. Mm-hmm. I mean, technically, he hasn't started yet, right? I mean, like
he's just started
hanging out for the most part. Ted Phillips is still in that seat. It hasn't shifted fully. I do wonder if anything will shift at all. Like, will he become a little more visible? Because, right, he had his press conference and then it's like gone. He's ghosted into the back. Yeah. And part of it's just because he literally probably can't. Right. And so, like, April 17th rolls around. Is he a little more visible? Are there some more comments here and there? And I think didn't they say that Ted's going to basically still stick around a little bit as a consulting role or something?
I'm sure he will. What else does he have to do?
Yeah. And then one more from Warren. I always say, from the time that you put a shovel into the ground, it's about 36 months if you stay on target. But the key is when you put the shovel in the ground, because now you have to get all the legislation done, work through all the political elements, design the stadium, make sure it comes to life. So that's really what the timetable becomes. So, Danny, what do you think about that 36 months?
I think that's best case scenario. Especially with how Chicago weather is and whatnot, like, you don't want to have, I think it was what the Houston Astros park years ago that had, or no, it was the Milwaukee Brewers who had construction workers perish because they just kept deciding to work and it wasn't, good enough conditions. I think it was like a crane tipped over and took a couple lives of workers. So, I think it's best case scenario. I just don't know what to expect or when to expect that 36 month waiting game to start, because like you said, they don't really want, I believe it was Arlington Heights doesn't want to give them any money. So they're going to have to figure out ways of getting state funding or whatever it might be.
Well, like you said, right. Like, when does that 36 month start? Cause like Warren said, you want to get all that legislation done. You want to make sure you have the stadium designs. You want all of the roadblocks the best you can out of the way before you even do that. Cause you don't want to put, for all those people who are really excited, I'm excited about it. I think it's gonna be really cool, but it's gonna take a while.
It's gonna take a while, and yeah, it's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be Bears Land. You're gonna have a Bears Hall of Fame, the new stadium. You're gonna have like parking lots, a casino, hotels. It's gonna be cool. Like, it's gonna just be a big Bears amusement park. Which, if that's your thing, yeah.
Just a couple more things that came from this week, right? Some new rules came from the league meetings. Most important rule, in my opinion, that the number zero is now allowed to be worn. So, Danny, which current Bear would rock the number zero the best?
Which current Bear would rock the number zero the best? Part of me would want to say Deontay Foreman would look pretty tough in that uniform, but I don't think he's going to wear it. I know we were all kind of speculating that Mooney might when he had that tweet of the eyes and stuff on it, but I think a lot of people don't understand is when you change your number, you got to buy back all the jerseys with your number on it. And he's on a fifth round salary. So that's kind of expensive. I'm not trying to think of another one. Like, he comes to mind. I don't know. Jaquan Brisker, I think, might be kind of cool flying around as the hard hitting safety in zero, but he looks nice in nine. What about you, Mason? Who's the guy you would think looks good in zero?
Honestly, I really liked the idea of Deontay Foreman as well. And it's just something about him standing in the backfield, right, getting the handoff right in the gut in the zero and then just taking off, like, really resonated with me. The other one, and you're going to hate this, would have been Tremaine Edmonds. Because
he was actually one I was playing with the idea of, honestly.
Oh, okay. Because yes. I go back to, like, Little Giants. And how, like, Icebox, like how like the big X on her, and just like, I don't, it's just be the opposite, the X and the O. So yeah. To me, just like the man in the middle, the big O, just, I think that would have been cool. That would be cool, but
would be cool.
Probably going to be a new player. Like you said, it costs way too much money to switch.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, I think there's not really – all the other rules are kind of boring, to be completely honest.
They,
I
mean, really didn't – like, there's always things where they, like, kind of shake up the rules a little bit, but they didn't really do much this year. Like, I thought they for sure were going to change, like, the rugby-style scrum the Eagles do to get their first down on every quarterback sneak of, like, fourth and two or shorter ever, but they didn't change that. I'm actually kind of shocked by that.
Two of them that – one that passed and one that didn't, that was interesting. Like, now they are allowing teams to play multiple Thursday night football games, which is awful. You know, it's hard enough to play one of those, let alone.
That's terrible.
And, you know, it's like the top profile player guys, right? I think, like, Patrick Mahomes tweeted out, you know, an emoji with a, you know, palm to the face, because he knows there's a pretty good chance he ends up playing two of those.
It's just such a, it's such a meaningless game. It's a bad product. And these guys need time to heal. They're in multiple car accidents every week. And people are like, every year, it's like, God, this Thursday night game sucks. Why do you think that is? They don't have enough time to recover from a Sunday to a Thursday. They just don't. It's not enough time.
And then every once in a while, you have, like, the car wreck that is some random, like, Monday night game also becoming somehow a Thursday night. That happened, like, one time, but then, like, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense. But then when some one thing that didn't get passed, which is ridiculous in my opinion, is the ability to make up for potentially game-changing roughing the passer calls, right? That one getting rejected, I understand you're trying to speed up the game, and we saw the debacle that the pass interference was, but that was just because they weren't even trying, in my opinion, to actually make that work. Mm-hmm. They were just like, here, take this for a year. Oh, it didn't work. Oh, no, let's get rid of it. So they basically just cut it off early and said, yeah, we're not even going to deal with this
roughing pretty much one. And John, I see your comment down here. I don't think they would make rule changes for the Eagles play more offense means more eyeballs. It's not the offense thing. It's the player safety thing of the very nature of that play where they're all going low. You're seeing Hurts getting popped in the back by his own players. Because the last thing they need is a guy who was an MVP candidate getting a spinal cord bruise or something like that because his guy was spearing him trying to get him past the first down marker. That was my only thought on it.
Well, and the other thing I would say specifically for the going back, you know, for that roughing the passer one is we've actually saw there was like an uptick in some of the injuries to the tackling individuals mm-hmm. because, right, that whole like don't land with your full body weight on them and all that. So they're trying to do these crazy like alligator rolls to get off. And I mean, they're having to go from full speed to try to get around the edge, to try to get up the middle, get to the quarterback, and then all of a sudden lock it and ramp it down in order to try to like tackle this quarterback who now you have guys like Justin Fields who are as big and Josh Allen who are as big and as strong as some of the running backs and wide receivers that are out there. Like, it's also not necessarily fair to the defenders, but you know, it's an offensive league. You and I talk all the time about that. The underthrown pass interference stuff, which I know is something you just absolutely despise. It's whatever's going to get more points. And unfortunately, helping the defense is not going to get more points.
Nope. Much to my dismay.
I think for the most part, that's all of our news from the week that was. We got our, like I said, mock draft coming up in a little bit here. Is there anything, Danny, that you're particularly looking forward to over the next couple weeks before the draft, or are you just ready for the draft to get here?
I'm kind of just ready for the draft to get here. We're in a really kind of a lull period. Like the pro days are cool. Like you get to see Anthony Richard throwing to his own guys, but how many quarterbacks or whatever do you hear having a bad day at their pro day? They're throwing to guys they recognize. They're throwing to guys they know. I think the cool part about the pro day is you get the local kid from the small school. Like that's how Adam Thielen got noticed by the Vikings out of, I think he was at Minnesota State or something like that years ago. And he went to Minnesota Golden Gophers Pro Day just as an invite. So you get to see the local kids get a shot and you never know. You never know what you might find. I think that's how Miles Austin was discovered years ago out of Monmouth College, you know, before.
What a name drop. That is really cool though. Like you said, just to be able to have that spotlight is pretty nice.
Yeah, because these guys aren't going to – a lot of these guys don't go to the real combine. There's only, what, 300 invitees to the real combine, right? So there's so many football players. There's 160, I believe, Division I college football programs, each rostering 200 kids. Do the math.
My soapbox for the pro days is more, I see it as another opportunity to get hurt. It's traipsing around in your shorts and your t-shirt for how much are you really getting out of it? Like,
wasn't that David Ojabo last year? Yeah. Or was that the combine?
No, it was at, I'm pretty sure it was at his pro day.
Yeah.
And he missed the entire year because of it. I bring that up. Another reason is because Paris Johnson, this one clip was going around Twitter on his pro day. And I actually took a snippet of it and tweeted it out because I didn't like it as much as everyone else did. He was facing away, jumped in the air, twisted 180 degrees, landed, and then, went back into his shuffle trying to show his quickness and agility and all that stuff. First of all, he never has to jump and land in 180 degree twist. Why the hell are you having him do this? How often does he actually practice doing that? Second of all, if you slow that down and actually watch what happens to his right knee, it slams into a genuvalgus moment, just moving midline. That's literally the recipe for an ACL tear. So, like, basically, you're trying to show off this guy's athleticism, doing a moving pattern that he never does, that he doesn't practice, that he doesn't need to do. For what? Just to make it look cool and because you have to fill in time in a stupid pro day?
Every time I hear "for what," I think of the old Ricky Waters quote years ago when he's coming. It was a game that they were supposed to win to go to the playoffs, I believe. Or it was like a playoff game. I can't remember which. I was very young for the game. But they ask him why he alligator armed a potential reception that would have gone for a first down. And he goes, "For who? For what?"
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. Like, but we're going to wrap that part up. We're going to take a short break. And then when we come back, we are going to jump into our mock with a special guest.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back in. Mason West, Danny Meehan here with Brad Spielberger Esquire. Got to throw that in there because I don't hear it said enough. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being patient, guys. I apologize for the late entry, but good to see you guys.
Brad Spielberger Esquire, penis.
Yeah, you know what? You got to throw this on there. You know, when you earn that, you got to spread it, especially with how awesome the things you do are, like the stuff you do at PFF.
Yeah, it's pretty great, Brad, what you do. It's you, and you me, make
I love it.
You make well, you guys all are far of us too kind. Dumb.
Yeah, you guys are far too kind. Very, very nice of you. I will say the Esquire thing, like, it is kind of a troll. Like, I am trolling with that on my Twitter handle.
You absolutely are.
Yeah, and I think some people think it's I'm like I'm taking it seriously and like I want to be referred to as Esquire. Like, it is a joke, but anyway, I like you said, I'm not going to pay that money and earn that degree and not throw that on the end of, come on. That's what it's all about.
Here, do I get my cool little things right here? Just FF. I get my cool name stuff now, too.
Yeah. FF.
There you go. I hang the banner.
Hang the banner.
We are going to go through, and this is going to be 100% accurate, obviously. As a reminder, I say this every time. This is the fifth time I'm saying this. Danny and I cannot repeat players. So if your favorite player is sitting there, we cannot pick them. I understand. Like, maybe you want this receiver, this tackle, whatever. Go watch the previous episodes. The whole point of this is to have you get players that you haven't heard of before.
Or better yet, Mason, we don't care.
I mean, I care. I'm a teacher. I care from that perspective.
Why are you lying to the folks?
Well, I don't know. Okay, anyway, getting to the good stuff. So, boop, 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 boop. And then, of course, we got Brad. Oh, hello. Yeah.
Made him and, real tall.
Here's the one thing, Brad. Yeah, Brad's tall. That's why I did that.
Is that Foster's House for Imaginary Friends?
Honestly, I don't know where I got that from. It worked.
Okay.
All right. So, first things first. Let's get right into it. The way we're doing this in order is, if a trade happens or whatever, we're trying to do this in the order that would occur. So I actually traded back first. As you can see here, I traded with the Patriots, went back to the 14th pick, acquired the 46th pick, the 107th pick in round four, and then also the 117th pick. Just getting a lot more value. Is this the most likely? Yeah, probably knock off one of those fourth rounders, but PFF mock let me do it, so I did it.
Hey, the mock, the trade values are just based on prior trades and the Jimmy Johnson chart. So look, I won't, the player trades are sometimes tough. I mean, they are also based on prior trades, but the, if the mock lets you do it, the draft thing lets you do it, it's because it's happened in the past. So that is a nice trade though. That is juicy.
Well, hold that thought, Brett. Because so like Poles has said previously, right? The way that the Bears operate, they run their own simulations, right? And try to figure out what the heck is going on. And like I've said previously, I really try to just do the mock. I sit down and say, this is my mock simulation. This is how I'm gonna roll. But I did run a couple simulation ones, and I found that a player that I wanted really couldn't get past the Titans at 11. And I kind of realized that after I made this trade. Oopsie daisy. So I traded back up to the 10th pick.
Oh, wow.
But as you notice, I didn't give up the 14th pick. I gave up the 46th, the 61st, the 107th, and then I gave up a future second and a future sixth.
Jesus Christ.
I got value. We're not drafting
2025, so, or 2024. So
Yeah. I got value, and so I figured I would spread the love. And actually, that leads me to Brad and I picking the same person, me at 10, him at 9. Paris Johnson Jr., he wouldn't get past the Titans most of the time I was looking at this. So I felt like I needed to get back up there. Brad, why did you take Paris Johnson here?
It makes sense. He couldn't get past the Titans. He was top five for us in outside zone run blocking grade. So I'm sure that is kind of, you know, factoring into the situation here among tackles. Obviously, Titans have a similar run scheme as Chicago and Luke Getsy. I will say this, though. I'll be honest. I think I messaged maybe Dan this yesterday. I love Paris Johnson. He's a good player. I think I've become a Broderick Jones guy over the last couple of days.
Welcome.
Yeah. So I watched probably 400 snaps of each yesterday, and I think but nevertheless, let's go back to Paris Johnson. So I think you can see with him that he is a first-year left tackle. He oversets sometimes, and guys will beat him on the inside, or he – his hands, I remember I tweeted out he had patient hands, and then I watched another 100 pass block snaps. I said, he has the most patient hands in the world. I haven't seen him strike a guy on a pass rush yet in 100 snaps. But I think when he does get his hands on someone, you see his long arms. You see, I think, what a lot of people can project forward with him, that if you fine-tune some things, tweak some things in his game, I think he could be a really, really, really good tackle, is a good athlete in space. But yeah, I think him and Broderick Jones, look, like, everyone likes to talk about how Braxton Jones can get bullied on the bull rush, which is fair. These guys are going to get bullied on bull rushes at the NFL level next year as well. They might fix that faster. But nevertheless, good player. Obviously, the Ohio State connection. I would not be upset with this pick at all.
Yeah, I mean, he's really interesting. I mean, he started at right guard in 13 games his sophomore season before being moved to left tackle for 13 starts. Just shows how versatile he can be. And I also think that does highlight he doesn't necessarily have to be your left tackle. If you're pretty happy with Braxton on the left side, that I think you can use, you know, mini camp and everything to figure out and say, you know what, who are the top five and who's going to fit best? So maybe he goes to your right side. But long, athletic, definitely need, as Brad said, needs additional technique work, but definitely possesses traits to be a long-term fit. And I think he can get bigger and stronger. He's got the frame for it. I would say that trepidatiously because everyone says, oh, they have the frame. Legitimately, he has the frame you can just throw muscle on as long as he gets in an NFL weight room.
Is that how you build muscle? You just throw it on people?
Just like clay, you know, just throw it in some sticks.
I thought that was synthol. Jesus.
I love how rhythmic he is in his slides and his pass sets. It's like a machine how he does it, but then he has the athleticism to be able to pivot as needed. Opens his hips well and accelerates, but he does need more pop in his block. It's more of like a catch sometimes than a true block, which I don't love. And he can bend at the waist a bit more than the knees, which isn't as ideal as a run blocker. But I mean, you're drafting him for his pass blocking, really. And he does tend to lean a bit forward too much, which leads to defenders hitting him with spin moves and leaving him in the dust. But, you know, he has the makings of an early tackle starter with ceiling to grow long term and can be a pillar of your offensive line.
Amen.
Anything you want to throw on, Danny, or should we just?
No, I mean, you guys kind of whatever. It's, you guys said everything that needs to be said.
Yeah, he good.
He good at the whole football.
Danny, you also traded back. Surprise, surprise.
Yes.
Did you not?
I'm confused. Is this the wrong one? Am I looking at the wrong? Nope, that's the correct thing. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Just dumbest guy ever.
All right, well, so Danny traded back with the Packers. And what'd you get? You got a 45th. You got, I can't read, it's blocking my screen. You got a 170th pick in the fifth round, and then you got a seventh round pick. I'm surprised you didn't try to get a little more out of, you know, your
rival. I made a rule for myself. If it goes under 80%, I won't make the deal.
I respect that.
Because it just feels like you could just take these teams for a ride, because the second it gets to 51%, it's just going to be like, yeah, sure, we're going to do that. And it just doesn't feel logical. So I was like, well, what's a good passing grade in high school or college? 80. It's a B. Cool. 80% is where I drew the line. It's a very arbitrary rule I gave myself. I'm not saying anyone else had to do it in this act of nothingness, but it's what I applied to myself.
And boring. All right, next. So because I did not trade back that far, I kept that 14th pick that I traded back with and somehow still got the 10th pick. I get to go again. And one of the last times I'll get to do this, I took Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I squashed all that concern about, do you go wide receiver? Do you go tackle? And I got both. You know, 6'1", 196 pounds, not the biggest wide receiver in the world, but as a sophomore, he ranked third in the FBS with 1,606 receiving yards and tying for ninth with 95 receptions in 13 games. When Olave and Wilson opted out to prepare for the draft, he caught 15 passes for 347 yards and three scores in the team's 48-45 Rose Bowl comeback win over Utah. Was robbed of that final season with a hamstring injury. That's a big concern. I don't like hamstring and wide receivers especially, but that's a whole other conversation. But he is a possession slot receiver and is a safety blanket to a T. Route tactician, tough across the middle. He just has a knack for getting open, as we saw with those statistics, and he can be your quarterback's best friend. Could be Justin Fields' best friend if you play your cards right. And he elevates his catch focus when contested, tracks deep throwing balls with great accuracy, but he does lack suddenness and for separation in and out of breaks, and likely to be viewed as a slot-only option. You know, at the end of the day, speed is a concern. There's a reason why he didn't run at the pro day. He got the number he wanted at the combine and said, I'm pretty good with that. Let's move on. And are you okay with that? Are you okay with drafting someone who may not be a true number one wide receiver by, you know, your normal standards at this point in the draft? And the other thing that we're hearing a little bit more and more, actually, that I'd bring up is Green Bay seems like they like him a little bit. So are you worried about him in the green and yellow? I love Jason.
I think Jaxon Smith-Njigba is a really good football player, and I probably would qualify him as my wide receiver one in this draft. And I think we need to get to past this point where we call someone a slot only player and mean it as a bad thing. It just means he's an inside player. There's nothing wrong with being an inside wide receiver. Guys make a lot of money being inside wide receivers. Cooper Kupp has made a ton of money and a ton of plays being an inside receiver who kind of shadows as a tight end at times for Sean McVay. It's wild, but I'm so over this like rhetoric of, oh, he's a slot only. Who cares? Wes Welker had multiple hundred reception receiving career reception, multiple hundred reception seasons in his career for Tom Brady playing a primary slot. Julian Edelman, people think is a Hall of Famer because of what he did in the slot. If you're the best in the NFL at being a slot receiver, guess what that makes you? One of the best receivers in the NFL. It's not just because you're playing the slot receiver.
I won't add anything on JSN. I agree with both points. That quality rant there that I definitely agree with. When you look for needs, and yes, the Bears this year have some like obvious 2023 needs. Look at a 2024 depth chart if you want to actually look at needs for a team. And so if people are pushing back on like taking a receiver because they have three, yeah, well, two of them are on expiring contracts, so it's a need.
Thank
like
you.
We'll get to my pick later. Like I have a corner. Corner is, in my opinion, one of the biggest needs of the entire roster, which I know people don't agree with. But again, same principle. So I figured I'd get that out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have to look ahead at what's going on. I mean, Claypool didn't wow you last year. Mooney's coming off a serious injury. You have to take all that. Danny gets to do a pick.
Yeah.
I know he picked that picture. Danny was like, can you use that? Can you use the abs one for LVS?
Use the abs one so I can just salivate. So Lucas Van Ness is the prototypical break all rules of my personal evaluations. I try my best, and I've told Brad this via text, where I hate getting smitten. I hate it because smitten means normally they're probably going to suck because it's so much just I am projecting things that aren't there yet. Lucas Van Ness has been a timeshare player, to say the least. He's always been on the pitch count. He's never been a full-time starter. The production is limited, but it's all just like what you see when he pops. The power is undeniable. He's got great first step. He's big. He's strong. He's fast. And it's just like you see it, and it's like I don't even think he's an edge. I would, because of his first step and the power he has, I would almost want to put 10, 15 more pounds on him and just play him inside a three technique all the time. That's my personal opinion. I don't know what a team would do if they got their hands on him because he is just such a – almost like a ball of clay. Like you're just – you're molding something that he isn't yet. You're trying to basically just be an artist and say, hey, craft this raw material into something gorgeous. And he's not a finished product, but he's just so much raw material that I think he's almost impossible to not play the what if game with. And that's effectively what I'm doing. And I think given his motor and his intensity and even the ability that they line him up all over, you'll see him on both ends. You'll see him at three technique every now and again. I've even seen him lined up at nose when I watch him. He's kind of just a chess piece for him. Now he doesn't play a ton of snaps, but I'm smitten and I hate it.
I would say my only issue here, now you're good, is that projection. So you've already traded back to nine, so you've already taken away an opportunity to get a quote-unquote guaranteed, not guaranteed, but best you can say in the NFL draft, player to nine. You trade back again, and now you're at 15. Like, is the Bears team, is the Bears defense in a place where they can hope on projection? And that would be my only concern.
Sure. And I totally understand that. And we also have to factor in he's still relatively new to the sport of football.
The other thing for me is you talk to a different person and they, all people that I respect, their football opinion, obviously you included, Danny, and some think he should lose 20 pounds and become a stand-up outside linebacker. Some people think he should add 10 and become a three tech. Like it's kind of weird. I don't know what that means. It could mean nothing. I just think it's kind of interesting because, again, like I said, good evaluators, people that know this stuff very well, have very different opinions on where he belongs. It's kind of interesting.
Sure. It is, especially because he just doesn't line up at one spot every down. And he is on, what, like a 54% snap rate? Like, he's just not playing a lot.
Yeah, and just to that point, for people that are wondering, like, it's not – Iowa doesn't play underclassmen. Like, they're going to always defer it. So it wasn't an issue if, like, they didn't think he was good or anything. That is not a concern where it could be elsewhere. I mean, it's a concern for other reasons, but it's not like, you know, he, like, wasn't earning snaps. That's just, like, Iowa – don't question what Kirk Ferentz does ever because you'll lose your mind.
Well, like questioning why he still has a job. I mean, never mind.
It was fun mostly, but yeah.
Danny's up again, and he sticks in the trenches just on the other side of the ball.
So I'm going to ruffle feathers with what I'm about to say. I've come to the point in my evaluation process that offensive tackle, I don't care what side you're on. If you're good at that side and I believe you to be the best at that side in your position class, I will deem you the best. He is my personal offensive tackle one. He is an immense human being. He's got the largest wingspan ever measured. He's a former basketball player, as Mason pointed out with this little picture right next to his screaming emoji picture on the left. He's got great feet. And while he doesn't move like tremendously, he moves well enough. And he's got those big man feet. And you see it in his kick slides and everything like that. And for everything he may lack in lateral quickness, you make up for with the extra length. Is he a perfect fit for the system? No, he's not. But Trent Brown wasn't a perfect fit for his own blocking system, and he did fairly well with New England for a few years in his career. There's no such thing as a scheme-proof, or what am I trying to say? There's no such thing as someone who's just going to be put in somewhere without deficiencies. There's always going to be something they can or can't do. I believe him to be the best, and I just think the things he can do are just unbelievable given his size and the gifts that he has. I know he's right tackle only. I know he's more meant for a gap scheme or power scheme, but I just can't ignore the actual physical talent that I see on tape when I watch him. Like, I just think he's an immensely strong, powerful, good athlete for his size. Like, he's not Daniel Falele last year coming out of Minnesota, where it was like, yeah, he played rugby, but he's just still big and lumbering. This guy's got basketball player feet, and that's just something you can't teach. Like, he's just an anomaly, I feel like, of sorts. Am I wrong? Maybe. Am I right? I don't know.
The Falele comment real quick, just one thought. Like, he doesn't – I mean, he's not that tall, but he doesn't let guys get under him where Falele did. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. the footwork's probably part of it, but, like, that's also – is that, like, leverage? Falele just played so high, and like, guys were able to take him for a ride. You don't really see that with Jones.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, and I drafted him, I think, in the second the mock, maybe. And I said the exact same thing, like, this probably is not going to fit. I mean, it'll be really interesting when, you know, they do their first – zone scheme run and he's like, you know, trailing behind everybody else. But other than that, I mean, I get he dominates in the pass. He really does. And you do have to factor in the fact that, you know, he does have that basketball player feet. You know, that is something that is going to transfer relatively well. And it's like, was he asked to do some of those things that maybe the Bears would ask him to do?
Now, I think the part that I'm most worried about is long-term health, because he is just so enormous and immense as a human being. Like, he could take a kick slide one day and his right knee just decides no mas. Like, I'm not wishing it on him. It's just a fact of life when you're that size. It's like in the NBA, when you get to a certain, I think it's over 6'11" or 7 feet tall, these guys just magically start having foot issues. It's not something that's controllable. It just kind of happens sometimes.
Big, definitely a big concern for him. I'm back up again. Round two, pick 53. I'm pretty sure everyone on this pod, guests and hosts included, has taken him. So I guess it's my turn now. Adetamiwa Adebare. I think I did pretty good with that.
Adebare.
Damn it. Okay, I'll give myself a C plus.
Call him Tommy.
Tommy. 6'2", 282 pound edge out of Northwestern. He's a really interesting prospect. I mean, if you look at production and tape early, that put him really as a day two, maybe even day three prospect. But there are parts of his tape, his Senior Bowl, and then his combine pro day performances as a whole. I mean, he ran a 4.49 40, which put him in the 99th percentile. It vaulted him up draft boards. And so now all of a sudden some people are talking about as a first round pick. That's rich for me, hence why I took him in the second round. He played 8 games as a freshman for Northwestern, which is impressive. Led the Wildcats in 2022 with 5 sacks, while also recording 38 total tackles, 9 for loss, and 2 forced fumbles. Kind of the island of misfit toys, kind of as a positional tweener, like Van Ness is to an extent. He's a little short for the edge and a little light for the interior. Was able to not only handle his own, but perform well at the Senior Bowl. Powerful man who wins with force and fluidity, good explosiveness in the upper and lower body. His rush movements are subtle but effective in getting to a blocker's edge. Now, with that, he lacks prototypical height and weight and length for a defensive end. And he has a below average, I would say, awareness and instincts right now. It's not a read and react. It's just kind of going. He play a bit robotic at times. And he has way too many missed tackles. I mean, he needs to shore that up. It was crazy how many times he's, like, laying on the ground looking up at the play ahead of him.
Him and Cole Kmet have that in common. They just love being on the grass.
One thing, Brad, if you don't know, Danny has this love affair with Cole Kmet and the ground, and it's a constant thing on the Bear Bones podcast.
It's my brand. I have to mention Cole Kmet being on the ground at some point in the show.
I'm glad you mentioned it with Tommy Adebowale, though. He does. Like, even on, like, run, like, setting the edge and run defense, you find himself on his back, and you're like, this guy is so strong and explosive. This shouldn't be happening as often as it does.
It's also hard to get a gauge on how good he actually is, because they had no one else on that line. So they were just able to tee off. Like, they tried moving him around, making him, like, a little chest piece, but he's just – it's like, oh, where's 99? There he is. Two bodies. Make someone else make a play.
For sure. Like, I'll say the tape to me isn't first round, but I really do think at this point he's going to be a first round pick. I really, or not there at 53, which is obviously unfortunate for the Bears, but I'd be shocked if he's there at 53.
Number nine, light it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. Like, there's no way I'm taking him in the first. If he happened to be there at 53, I'm okay with it. But
yeah,
any earlier, and it's like, I think there's safer prospects that you could be taking. Brad and Danny shared this person at this pick, round two, pick 53. So, Brad, why don't you take it first and discuss your man here?
Yeah. First and foremost, just off the top, if you're a three-year starter at outside corner at the U, that's probably a pretty good sign right off the top. But, yeah, I mean, look, he's kind of getting lost in the shuffle because this is a ridiculous cornerback class with 20, starters in it. Look, 6 foot, about 200 pounds, I think can play up in press, but also could, and that's where he's better, but I think he could play zone. Very good balance, contact balance, balance at throwing guys off their route and jamming, but not letting the jam kind of get him out of his stride. And I think he's just like I said, like a guy that we probably would talk more about if it wasn't for the level of talent at this position this year. A guy I like a lot, like I said, at the top of the show. I know it's a bit rich or a bit early maybe for an outside corner in some people's opinions. For me, it is certainly not.
I'm with you, Brad. Every time I do one of these things, I don't play around on them as much as Mason does, but I always tend to take one in the second round or so because it's like I just think – I don't even know if they want to extend Jalen Johnson. I would, but that's me. The other thing that stands out to me is I'm not saying it's a complete player comp, but he's hard to win jump balls on, 50-50 balls with outside receivers, because he's very kind of springy. He's very vertical. Like, he gets vertical real easy. It was like one of those things like everyone always assumed, like, obviously not player comp, but just the way he plays the 50-50 ball. Like, everyone always just assumed Brent Grimes when he was playing was an inside slot corner. But because of how he was able to jump and play physical at the point, he wasn't ever really just relegated to slot work. I think he's really good. He tested pretty well. He plays tough. He's got some stuff to clean up. He tends to play catch up a lot, relying a lot on his gifts and whatnot. But I think if he's in quite literally almost any other corner class, you're probably talking about him in the bottom of round one. But because of who he's in with this class, with the likes of Gonzalez and Weatherspoon and all these guys, he's just – kind of like the forgotten man, like you said.
He totally is. And just real quick, you mentioned the verticality. I mean, he had a 38.5-inch vert, and you do see that on film.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to just line him up and say, go get this 50-50 ball against him, because he's not going to let you do it.
Nope.
And like Brad had alluded to earlier, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Jalen. I remember after one of the shows that we did back with Chicago Audible, at the end of the year, one of the things we gave out was most disappointing player. And for me, like after his first year and even his second year, I was like, he's my most disappointing player. And I got torn apart for it. It's because, I mean, he had some PBUs, but not a lot. He didn't really get any interceptions, and that continued. And he's got injury issues. And he's not attached to this class either. You know, or he's not attached to this front office, I should say, excuse me. Like, if they can get someone that you reset the clock a little bit in terms of not having to pay them, and you get someone like this who in almost any other year is going to be a first-round pick, and you can take advantage of that, go ahead and do it.
I also think just the way he plays, you see it on tape, that he very much fits what Eberflus and Poles want the team to embody. He's very demonstrative, very excitable. Like, he's a fun player, truth be told.
Brad's up again. Round two, pick 61.
I know Danny loves this one. Go ahead. What are you saying?
Oh, everyone takes him, but I love him. Go ahead. Get after it, Brad.
I mean, he's just – look, I do like the Andrew Billings addition, but obviously, you know, again, a one-year contract. If you want the just tree trunk, nose tackle, run stuffer, supreme, but he's not just that. He does have a little bit of – look, he's not going to, you know, like rack up sacks, but he's got a little bit of juice. Like, he's – I think there are a couple plays on tape in pursuit where he's not giving up on plays, which again, Eberflus would probably love to see. And he's kind of lumbering at like 340 pounds, chasing dudes down, or at least trying to. But yeah, I mean, he's just so strong. And I just think this team, you know, interior defensive line is still the biggest need on this team by a decent margin. So
no, but why would you assume that I just love him? Why am I being
saying? You only told me like seven times is why.
quiet your voice, sir.
Danny just whispering sweet nothings.
Yeah, exactly.
I go to bed like rubbing the picture of him like Wolverine.
Yeah.
There are some guys though that do just end up in every mock I see that people float out there, and he is one of them. And I almost want to go anti those people because I'm like, I'm gonna be different. But like then you start watching his tape and you're like, damn it, I love you. Like it makes sense.
You know who else is that way? Moro Ojomo ends up in every
don't talk ill of Moro, who may be on my list.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Let me pretend to be shocked.
Danny did another trade here. So he originally was at the 61st pick, but decided to skedaddle, moving down to round 376, and acquired a 117th pick, as well as another pick in round 4 from the Patriots. Similar, actually, kind of got the back end of what I got from them in the first place from moving down.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. So we here's your reminder. We have the live draft show that we're going to do at Noon Whistle Brewing in Lombard, Illinois. If you're going, go to the Lombard one. Do not go to Naperville. They will not know what you're talking about. This is starting at 6 p.m. Thursday, April 27th, for the first night of the draft. Again, this is going to be pretty cool. We want to give back to you guys for supporting us, listening, always being in the chat, or you know, listening to the podcast later, Spotify, whatever the case may be. We're going to do some giveaways. So we're giving away a Hyper Ice Hypersphere. We're giving away a DJ Moore jersey. We have some cool stuff that Lester, you know, the Faja of the podcast, was able to get. So we're going to show what that is later. Obviously, we would fly Brad out, but this is only his first show. You know, we promised that to Kyrie, but he's done it twice. So that's just kind of why we did that. Sorry, Brad. If you want to come and hang out, it's on your own bill.
It's also harder for Brad to get on a plane.
Yeah.
Kyrie, you can like put in the overhead container. Brad needs like 4 seats.
Kyrie can be my carry on. Yeah.
Kyrie's never going to be back on the podcast. Yeah, come on by. Sorry, please do. We're going to have a lot of fun. We need to make this count because I spent a lot of money on sound equipment. So please make it worth my while. Danny, round 3, pick 64. The man, the myth, the legend, Tippmann.
All right, so I really don't think I need to cover him much. Like, I feel like he's another one that just kind of ends up in our drafts pretty regularly. Good physical player. He tested way better than I thought he was going to. Like, and when you go to the Wisconsin Badger program, they're kind of just known for just putting out the big corn-fed offensive linemen who play pretty well and for a long time in the NFL. Like, I really don't need to recap, and we've talked about him a couple times. He's a good football player, and I think the Bears need a center. Like, would you take one this high? Is interior offensive line really that high? But for me, the trade back – or not the trade – I traded back the first one, but this pick, he was the best player there. I didn't want to overthink it. I just took exactly what was there.
Brad, I'm curious on your perspective here, because I know you and I had an interesting convo about centers and their value a little bit. What do you feel about this value for Tippmann here at this pick?
So the one reason for him in particular I'd be cool with it is I honestly think he could play guard at some point in his career. I mean, he's got the size to do it, but I also think he has the play strength to do it as well. Yeah, in a general sense, look, like I get it's a weakness on the team, and I get there are some, you know, Jason Kelce's of the world that make a huge difference. Granted, he was a 6th-round pick, but it's just for me, like, you know, people would point to Creed Humphrey in Kansas City as well. It's like, yeah, if you have the best roster in the NFL or one of them with Patrick Mahomes, sure, you can take a center at same range, right? But it's just like when you need to add premium talent at premium positions, which the Bears do, you don't find those players in later rounds. It does not happen. And you can find starting caliber or above average centers in later rounds. It happens all the time. So it's kind of more of like a probability game. I get, like, if there's a perfect player that they love, I'm not gonna be mad about it. You know, it's just basically, you know, the research I've done on all those things, like the probability of finding a player at a certain position. You know, if you're trying to find an edge or a defensive interior defensive lineman beyond pick 64, good effing luck to you. It does not happen. So
yeah, it's a fair point.
Yeah.
So for yours, round 3, pick 64, you took this sexy beast.
Love it.
Yes, I did, and it's, I guess, funny because to me, he's a guard. I don't think he, like, his pass blocking needs to improve whatever he plays, but I think, you know, for a 24-year-old guy, a senior, like, I don't think he has the pass blocking chops to be a tackle in the NFL, and so, but that's fine. I think he's one of the best, like, just athletes to get into the second level of all the interior offensive linemen. He can scoot. He's quick off the line, has a good first step, and is a road grader. It is always tough when you watch the, you know, the D2 guys, or I guess North Dakota State is now like moving on up the chain with all their, you know, rattling off titles. But nevertheless, a really, really good, and he could fit in a gap or a zone scheme, but I think he has the athleticism to get, you know, to play in a zone scheme. And, you know, played some center too at the Senior Bowl, and was fine there. But yeah, a guy that is going to take a couple years to come along as a pass protector, but is a day one plug and play road grader at guard.
Yeah. For those listening, Cody Mausch, guy we're talking about right now. The thing that I like about him, I mocked him, I think it was last week, something like that, is just the fact that, I mean, no, he should be playing guard in the NFL, but in a pickle, like, you could slide him out to tackle and you're like, okay, we can get through this game or two until, you know, whoever you had there, maybe there was an injury, can come back. So the flexibility is huge. And then at the Senior Bowl too, he took like center snaps just to show that off, that he could do it. So someone that you could in theory play across five positions in round three is pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, so now this is where I picked him, this guy, round three, pick 64, Luke Weipler, because I already picked Tippmann and I kind of wanted a center. I'm not super happy about my pick. I'm going to start that off right now. But, you know, I did what I did. I do like the fact that he was an all-state tackle in high school. I mean, he's not obviously not going to do that in the NFL, but just the fact that he showed that cross-training ability to do that at one point, I like. He was a two-year starter at Justin's alma mater, Ohio State. Initial quickness gets him to some pretty solid angles, whether he's cutting off linebackers or reaching and sealing outside blocks. He's got really good snap-to-step quickness for A-gap blocks and capable of pulling and leading the action in space, and is best suited for a move-based running attack. Maintains a really solid base width and rush mirror. Arms are short by NFL standards, which are going to hurt him. And he's also got trouble dealing with power players. Like, he can be driven back into the quarterback, which is going to give people some Mustafer PTSD, unfortunately. He would Product need some solid arms. Yes. He would need some solid guard play next to him, because, you know, he's not the most physically imposing or average overall strength. And, you know, he's got the makeup of a starting center for his own rushing scheme. If he can get stronger and if he can have a solid line tandem next to him, he'll be fine. But, you know, I'm not as excited about him as I was about the Tippmann pick the week before. Not as excited about him as John Michael Schmitz, who I think I was had in my first mock. This one was a pick for need. And at the end of the day, if I was sitting there as the Bears GM on the real draft, I probably wouldn't make this pick. But, you know, this is a random mock draft, so I can do what the heck I want. Danny's up, round three, pick 76, a guy that's gotten a lot more steam about him, some energy as the draft season's gone on.
So let me preface this by saying, when I made this pick, I like Carl Brooks's tape. I will always worry about competition level. It's just the way I'm wired. I always will worry about guys in the MAC division who, if you aren't just absolutely blowing people away on a regular basis, I'm going to have questions as to how translatable you are. But my thought process was, this was almost like taking a Toronto Raptors approach to, like, just get a bunch of 6'8 guys. This was the defensive line equivalent of just get a bunch of guys who play all over the ball, who can line up at a bunch of different positions, because you already got Van Ness, who I said had been seen lining up everywhere. Carl Brooks played edge a lot at Bowling Green. I think he's a three technique in the NFL. So you can get a bunch of these guys who can kind of jump around and just do things and keep your guys fresh while also kind of keeping your best pass rushers in the most advantageous situation. When you watch him, he's got a tremendous first step. He gets off where he's trying to go. He understands angles and football geometry. There's not a lot of wasted movement in what he's doing, and he can't because he's a little bit undersized. He closes well. When he bears down on a ball carrier, that space and yardage in between him closes up in an instant. And you kind of see he understands hand technique. He might need a little more work there, but he knows how to set up his moves with a lot of hand work. This regime is going to love. He clearly loves football. He was a two-time captain and he was reliable. The best ability in any sport is availability. He started 48 games in his time at Bowling Green. I don't think he's a can't-miss slam dunk Bears prospect, but I'd be shocked if he's not high on their list of mid-round prospects that they love.
Yeah, I would agree. I'll just jump in because I have him later, so I can just talk about him now. Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's become another one of the darlings that just everyone mocks to the Bears every time when he falls there. There's a ton to like. He's a great athlete. I think he is a three tech as well. But, you know, like a little DeMarcus Walker action, you probably could play him on the outside and on early downs. I'm not sure why everyone's fallen in love with him and thinks he's this, like, have-to-have-him type of dude. But I guess, Daniel, like you said, I mean, he's played a ton of football, and even still, he's not some 24-year-old guy. He's still only 22. I guess he'll be 23, you know, on draft day. But really good pass rusher from the interior. And I think his hands are pretty solid as well. Like, he's not totally raw. He's not developed, you know, fully either. His upper body, I'm happier with his upper body than his lower body, frankly, if you're projecting towards what you want him to do kind of right away. He's light in the ass. You said it. We're all thinking
potentially NFL weight room. Can you get him a little bigger? Potentially, you know, looking at him, I think that's kind of who he is for the most part. He's just a little bit of a top heavy guy, unfortunately. So, you know, it is what
it's also, you also have to wonder, he does have short arms as well. You have to wonder how, like, he's not, like, the reason people are so giddy, I guess, about Kalijah Kancey is how he tested ridiculously. He didn't test ridiculously. Like, what did he test? Carl Brooks tested good, not great. And good, not great. Everyone's good, not great in the NFL. That's why they're in the NFL. It's not to say he can't be a good football player, but I think kind of like Brad's wonderment is fair. I think it's more just the flavor of the week. Bears fans are seeing people they respect mock him. So, and then they'll like catch a clip or two of him. And it's just like, oh, look what he can do. And then it's like, you didn't bother to go watch the rest of the game where he was very just existing.
Yeah, I can give it the data. The Bears have mocked him 17% of all picks are by Bears users on the mock draft sim, which is 10% higher than anybody else, which I love.
Jesus, that's a lot.
That's a big discrepancy.
Yeah, I love that. Hey, I mean, look, Carl Brooks, future Bear, we get it.
Oh, Brad, like you said, he did pick him as well, but not until round four, pick 103. We basically saw what we talked about that already. We can move on. I, at pick round four, pick 103, was the man that Daniel was alluding to that a lot of people are picking. Moro Ojomo, 6'3", 292-pound defensive tackle out of Texas. Now, in 2022, he did have 32 tackles, 3 sacks in 12 games, 5 starts, 3-year starter, which I think does line up with what Flus is kind of looking for, someone who loves football, who's a leader. He can easily force his way across the face of backside blocks and has the lower body strength to drive through blockers. He plays the whistle, which very much fits Flew's hits principle. And he's a tactician with a high motor, a variety of moves, and displays really good hand use, shows strong finishing bursts, and has the power to hold at the point of attack as a run defender. Quick to react and locate the ball, and shows enough speed to succeed in backside pursuits. He's got pretty good balance and a strong, flexible core, so he doesn't end up on the ground like a previously mentioned Northwestern edge we discussed. That being said, his movements can be a bit stiff and mechanical. He demonstrates a lot of hip tightness, which limits his pad level, so he's got to be able to get that a little bit deeper. Needs to improve his snap quickness as an interior rusher, and he's a bit of a straight-line mover, so he doesn't really have the range to chase in pursuit. Ojomo's athletic size profile, Chasm is a bit of a tweener between a 3-4 and a 4-3, but you know, his alignment creates variances in how effective he ultimately can be. If he's surrounded by a good cast, if he's got a good defensive coordinator with good stunts, I think he can definitely be something. But, you know, there's ultimately a bit of a limitation. Danny, round four, pick 103, gets in the Nathaniel Dell bandwagon, which I am a captain of.
So Tank Dell is pretty much in my wheelhouse of, I will always fall in love with the diminutive receiver. It's going to happen year in and year out. There was KJ Hamler years ago. There was the kid from Purdue whose name I'm drawing a blank on in Arizona now.
Rondell Moore.
Yep, Rondell Moore. He was another one of my big guys. Jahan Dotson was my undersized guy last year who I was just like, I can't get enough of this dude. So here we are, another undersized small receiver who I'm sure I'm going to completely fall for and just be completely wrong about, because look at all the other ones. I just think, oh, Jahan's going to be great, but that's neither here nor there. So Tank is down in the draft community right now because he tested good, not great, as a supremely diminutive wide receiver. Like Rondale Moore was a little more rocked up. Same thing with KJ Hamler. This guy's 165 pounds. That's little. Like, that's tiny. But to get to his good stuff, very productive, scores a lot of touchdowns, 14 over his last nine games or so while at Houston. Explosive. He gets in and out of his breaks. He understands his patterns and how he wants to sell them. He doesn't really give much of an inclination as to what route he's going to do. He does have one of my pet peeves. He kind of has the dropsies. I'm going to go steal Brad's bit here. PFF has him with 21 drop passes over the past two seasons while at Houston. That's a little too many. I like my receivers to be able to catch the football. I feel like that's kind of a prerequisite to play the position. He does, however, have some go up and get it for a guy who's a little small. He's kind of like a ballerina on the sidelines at times. He does real well getting his feet in bounds and knowing where he's at. So that proprioception, knowing where your body is at in relation to where you are on the field. But he just kind of small. Really small. I like him. He's really productive, and I'm not really sure. I always wonder about guys who are productive on a roster where you know he's getting the ball. Like, Houston didn't really have much else to go to. So that's also going to factor into the drops, where you're going to get a lot of balls thrown your way. You're probably going to drop more than you should because you're just getting the ball more than ever. It was like the Brandon Marshall argument years ago. Like, oh, he caught 100 balls, but he dropped 30. He had 180 targets, guys. Like, that's a lot of targets. I really like him. I think because at one point, I know he was like a second round thought. If you can get him in the fourth round, given his production and what I think he could be, you might have yourself something. I don't know how good he's going to be given the size limitations, but he also offers value in the punt and kick return game. So there's that.
Yeah, the comp I was going to say was Jalen Darden, who I also fell in love with out of North Texas, and then was a fourth round pick and is no longer on the Buccaneers. But I'll throw this in. I don't have any other thoughts. You covered a lot of it. A buddy who works at Houston, who I always bug every year to be like, are there any guys I should keep an eye on or players coming out that you're higher on than anybody else? And every year he's like, meh. He said Tank Dell is the hardest working kid he's ever coached. He's been in coaching for like a decade. So thought that was cool. Thought it was notable. Could not sing his praises more just as a worker, but he is a very small individual.
Follow the production. If someone can produce in college football, they deserve a shot.
Well, that was like the Darnell Mooney thing years ago at Tulane, right? There was no one else that they had to worry about. It was just like cover Darnell.
It's true.
Danny's up again. Round four, pick 114. Who you got?
Luke Schoonmaker. So let's just start by saying this. Luke is pure projection and him blowing up the damn combine. He didn't have a ton of projection or production rather at Michigan. He's big. He's strong. He tested really well. Like, I don't think anyone really saw that coming, but a little overage, which is going to help him slide a little bit. I believe he's already 24. I think he's going to be 25 at some point during his rookie year. Spent a lot of time there in Ann Arbor. But other than that, I worry about him against man coverage. He doesn't seem to really do great from what I've watched against that. He seems to have that Cole Kmet thing where he sits down well and finding soft spots of the zones. But he's a much better mover. Blocking, I think he's got the right mechanics. He's willing, and I think blocking, similar to like defense and basketball, is just kind of you got to want to do it, and he seems to have the want to. So I think he's going to be a nice pick. Like, again, the tight end class might be the best class of any position in this draft. It's like between that and I think probably corner, but – I really like him. I think if you're getting him in the middle of the fourth round like this one, you're probably getting a guy who'd probably be a second round tight end just based off of, you know, blowing up the combine the way he did. I don't know. I really don't have much to add just because he wasn't the most productive player at Michigan. He just was there a long time.
For me, if I'm going to go tight end in this, I don't know. I'm going to take a slightly bigger swing at it if I'm going to. Otherwise, I'm just get like a real late guy or undrafted free agent now that you have both Kmet and you have Tanyan. So if you're telling me Darnell Washington in the second round. Like, all right, I can get behind that because I also think he's one of the only tight ends that's going to be able to legitimately block day one in the NFL too, and that's going to help you out in your run game and Justin out a ton. But, you know, round three, round four, some of these guys, I'm not I'm whelmed. I wouldn't be against it. I'd be like, okay, cool. But I wouldn't, I'm not like, yay. First of all, I got that from Teen Titans, not stealing your word. I'm stealing it from Nightwing, if we're going to put it somewhere.
Nightwing.
Anything on Luke's Schoonmaker, Brad?
I'll be honest. I mean, I haven't watched a ton. I'm not sure there is much to watch. But he did. I mean, all these tight ends are testing very well. They're all projections, frankly, at the next level.
I heard. I think it was Lance Zierlein and the Athletic Football Show had a theory on this that all the undersized power forwards from high school are now just shifting their attention to football and becoming tight ends. And it actually seems like it tracks. Like Darnell Washington was probably an undersized power forward. Schoonmaker was probably like an undersized power forward. It's a kind of a cool theory, isn't it? Like.
Yeah,
wish I had thought of it, but I'm an idiot.
So I'm back up round four, pick 117. I went with KJ Henry here, 6'4", 251-pound edge out of Clemson. He recorded 30 tackles, 11 assists, 50 total pressures, including 31 QB hurries, 14 QB hits, 5 sacks in 2022. He is a super athletic guy. I mean, ran a 4.63 40, 165 yard split, 31.5-inch vertical. He's got some gnarly upfield bursts, but he does tend to get a bit face up with the rusher. And so he's going to need to improve his hand usage for more effective corner turns. When he is used as a chess piece being moved around, he excels really dynamic in twists and blitzes. And one of his best moves is his smooth inside rush that is oftentimes too quick for tackles and leaves them wanting. Disruptive at the snap quickness as a run defender, capable of transitioning from speed to power in a rush, and he reads the quarterback and frequently bats down passes, which I love. He's a redshirt senior, so he's a little bit on the older side there, and he's struggled at times to set the edge, and he does need to improve his hand fitting at the top of a rush. So, you know, I think he's kind of where he's going to be at. I don't think there's a ton more you're going to really see ceiling-wise out of him, but what you're getting is still really good just with how explosive he is.
I think you touched on the one thing I would throw. Like, he has a plan on most snaps. Like what you said with the batted passes, I think he's very aware of what he's doing. Could just be come from experience. It showed very well in our true pass rush grade. Because I think he's prepared for what he's trying to accomplish. You know, on each rush.
Danny, round four, pick 133.
God, the Columbus connection is real.
100%.
So Ronnie Hickman, I kind of almost akin to Adrian Amos in a way, whereas Amos was solid and steady, but you could rely on him more in the run, whereas Hickman's kind of the inverse of that, solid, steady, but a little bit better in the passing game. He's really, like, trustworthy. He understands what his keys and his reads are. You're not going to fool him much, but it's like he understands what his role is. Like, he doesn't try to do too much. He gets football geometry. He takes good angles. He plays hard. He tested better than I thought, which is probably just a lot of these guys. It's a fast track in Indy and everything like that. He's a willing tackler, not the best tackler. What I like about him too, he's when he's making a play on the ball. Sometimes a lot of these guys who want to be ball hawks, they tend to go for the interception rather than just making the play end and batting it down. Ronnie has no issue just kind of breaking the ball up. Just live to fight another down and just make sure that the play is made on your end. Sometimes he gets fooled, play action will get him. He's more at times you feel like you see like the gerbil running on the wheel in his head when he's trying to figure out what's in front of him rather than just reacting and reading the play. He's a little bit stiff. Sometimes it makes it hard for him to be a terrific tackler because he just can't move the way other guys can. Good, solid football player. He's nothing special or spectacular, which is why he's in the middle of the fourth round.
Indeed. All right. Round four, pick 133. And actually, Brad, you might also have him too. I'm now blanking on what it was.
But I'm a fan.
Oh, there you go. Jacorian Bennett.
The other Terrapin.
5'11", 188 pounds. He had an interesting start. You know, he actually almost gave up football in high school because he wasn't getting a lot of playing time, but he was an all-state track athlete. He ended up getting back on, going to Hutchinson Community College before heading to Maryland. In 2022, he led the Terps with 11 pass breakups and tying for the team lead with two interceptions to go along with 39 tackles, 1.5 for loss, and blocked kick in 12 games. He fast. He ran a 4.3 40-yard dash, which is in the 90th percentile. Was invited to the Senior Bowl where he did pretty well. He's not a ball hawk as much as a cornerback that makes wide receiver lives very difficult. Kind of like what Danny just said previously, you know, he goes for the ball and does everything he can to just make sure you don't catch it. He has a high passes defended total, 27 over the last two seasons, which is a lot, which speaks to his aggressiveness at the catch. He's got really good body control to stay with wide receivers performing double moves. And he appears to be comfortable when he's playing off coverage, which allows to quickly get eyes on the quarterback while keeping the receiver in view. I mean, he will literally pull, chop, slap, claw. He will do whatever he can to get the ball free, which I really can appreciate. And he's also a very willing tackler. He's got really great straight line speed, but he lacks recovery burst. His tape shows some balance issues too. So when he transitions downhill out of his pedal, he'll slip, he'll stumble a bit, which does prevent him from getting to where he needs to. And a lot of his aggressiveness has led to him being penalized 13 times over the past two seasons per PFF. Bennett's upside is really his positional versatility. Like he's going to be able to play cornerback, nickel, and then also potentially even slide over to safety if you really need him to. I think Danny already talked about him. But this is Brad's trade that he did here in the fourth round. And moving on. All right. Round five, pick 136, Danny.
So McBride was 100% a player that I drafted right after watching a couple games of him. McBride, I will start with his deficiencies. He's not a great catcher of the ball. He has some ball security issues, which is going to lead to doghouse issues in the pros, but he runs hard. He's a really good just stick ball and gut run. The way he physically runs and nothing else, not his pass protection or his ability to catch, he reminds me of Chester Taylor in Minnesota, just the style in which he runs, which isn't a bad player for the back end of the fifth round. I think he's a good football player. I think he's limited, which is why he's probably going to fall, and you got always got to wonder about the competition level. But McBride does things real well. He's just good, tough, physical runner, just very flawed, which normally makes for a good college player and maybe not so much a good pro, especially when you factor in the fumbling issues.
Yeah, I know I mocked him before. And after I did, you know, again, he's a fun runner, and I think he's going to give you a lot, do his effort the max he can on special teams. But, you know, with the current Bears running back room now, how it sits, and I'm like, ugh, does he really have a spot at the table with that pass catching deficiency with some of those fumbles? And now I'm like, I'm getting cooled off on Dwayne McBride compared to where I was, which is a shame because, I mean, I like him as a runner.
It's just sometimes how it is. You start going through the process. Like I said, I was coming off a high of watching him in a couple of games, and I was like, God, he runs so well. He's there. Let's take him. And then, you know, you get put on to a guy like Izzy from Pitt by Brad yesterday, and you go watch a couple games from him, and you're like, yep, that's better and different.
That's who I'd prefer. All right, Brad's up. Round five, pick 136. This is someone I mocked, I think, just last week, and one of my favorite players.
Dude, he is my crush, I think, right now as well, which maybe we should realize maybe he's going to go a little bit earlier than we all would like him to. Tested off the charts, 6'3", all of 6'3", long arms, 4.5, 140, good explosive numbers too, at a 37-inch vert, 10-foot broad. For me, he is like – he has no hand technique and no pass rush moves. He's all just power and burst and quickness in the short area, which to me, almost to a degree, I think when you see that, you're actually okay with it. You say, okay, if he adds that as well, what could he potentially become? And so that's him for me. Like, he is a freak athlete, a good pursuit player that I think would fit in both against the run and against the pass, but just does not have a lot of creativity and a lot of, like, you know, moves beyond frankly just using his speed to power. I have a very big crush on Yaya Diaby. I think he's a stud.
As a Louisville Cardinal fan, I approve this message.
Yeah, you can just imagine or hope, like, after, you know, a year or two in an NFL, you know, defensive room, like, and actually being taught on the field by, you know, people who really, really know what they're doing, what he could become. It's exciting. I mean, I would really hope the Bears would take a flyer on him. Round five, pick 136. Different edge. I have Isaiah McGuire out of Mizzou. 6'4", 238 pounds, 28 tackles for loss, 14 and a half sacks, and 3 forced fumbles over his final 2 seasons. Good size and length as an edge. Blend of athleticism, flexibility, power, and an urgency that makes him attractive process. You know, he basically plays with reckless abandon. He's like see ball, get ball kind of an edge. Bulldozer when clearing out space and end tackle twists, and has shown growth from year to year, which I love. You know, he hasn't shown at plateau yet. Flashes power and disruption, which may allow him to project as a starter, but for now his tape is just inconsistent, and that's his biggest knock. Sometimes he plays a bit outside of himself, loses control, and then he needs to channel that speed and power. He can add more strength, which should help substantially, and needs to be taught how to vary his entry points and angles to keep NFL tackles guessing. His run defense also needs work. So basically, he's just, you know, a rocket, and if you could, like, figure out how to aim the rocket, then he would be great. But as of right now, he just sometimes shoots off and just does whatever he wants to do. But there's a lot of potential there. Danny, round five, pick 148.
Hey, look, it's another Louisville player. So Yazir Abdullah is kind of a square peg, round hole kind of thing in Chicago, because he's probably more of an off-ball linebacker in a 40 front defense. But I almost would like to see him, if, like, you were to do that, almost make him an exclusive pass rushing Sam because of the physical gifts he has and the lack of actual, like, I guess, experience at off ball, because he played almost exclusively on the edge at Louisville. He's super rocked up. He's like I think he could be a bodybuilder if he wanted to be, which is a really stupid thing to say, but I'm in the gym culture. I've tried to do things like that. And he has that kind of physique. Real good, thick legs. He's strong. He's real strong and impactful in a straight line. He doesn't waste any movement, probably because he can't, because he is a littler guy. I don't know if he actually, like, would be great as a stand-up linebacker, which is why I'd want him to be that, like, 40 front rush Sam, and that's it. Kind of like how I think that's how the Denver Broncos initially used Von Miller, just as an off-ball linebacker who would blitz, or like Roosevelt Colvin to really go back in the wayback machine under Dick Duron. Good, solid run defender, and he's also got a lot of experience as a special teams ace. But I just kind of liked him as, like, an athletic profile and what he could be. I don't think he's a hand in the ground edge just because he's too light. Like, I know Louisville famously had Elvis Dumervil, who was a short edge, but he's just not that kind of player. I like him a lot, and unfortunately, guys, I'm going to have to bow out after this little breakdown. It is time for me to go. I am currently pre-engaged with other things. Brad, as always, it's a pleasure being able to speak with you. I'm sure we'll text. Mason, I hope you guys do the rest of this show justice, and don't screw up Puka Nacua for me as the late-round receiver I have weird affinity for, okay?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Nice having you on, Danny. Do what you do.
All right.
I'm not going to lie. I don't know anything about Danny's players, so we're just going to highlight them as we get to them. But we're getting wrapping this up soon anyway. Another Louisville guy. Round five, pick I guess 48 for Brad.
Yeah, I guess it's the Louisville show. My bad, I didn't mean to cut you off. I guess it's the Louisville show. So Keechel Clark is a tough one for me. I was tipped off to him by a friend of the show, I'm sure, EJ Snyder, and a couple other people after East West Shrine. Basically, he told me he was the first person to say it. I asked a couple other people, and they were like, yeah, he had an incredible week and has caused a lot of people to go back to his film. The tough thing for me is I think he needs to be a slot in the NFL. He's about 5'10", 180 pounds. But in today's game, like, he also is not a good tackler, and I think would get run over by some of the bigger slots in the NFL, whether it's in run blocking or just trying to make tackles on them. And he looks more comfortable on the outside, but all of those negatives aside, very fast, very twitchy, good agility, is a, like a, Is that a bad talent because he's unwilling? I think he just doesn't have the size. Like he wants to make football plays all the time. But yeah, it's just like if he could figure it out in the slot, he's so good laterally that I think he could make sense there. It's just not something that I think he's done a lot of. But you know, maybe kind of a projection at this point. Obviously, we're getting to the later rounds. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, at this point, you're just taking flyers on some talent that you see, and you're hoping you can fill in some of those holes. No problem with that. Round five, pick 148. Gerard Clark out of Coastal Carolina, nose tackle, 6'4", 345. His college career got off to a pretty bumpy start. He actually redshirted as a freshman, but the following year he suffered an injury and missed the entire season. Then in the spring, he actually transitioned from tight end to defensive tackle, where he played the rest of his career at so far. He changed his body by adding 85 pounds from 2018 to 2019. In 2022, as a junior, he played in 12 games and recorded 22 tackles, 7 assists, while making 22 stops. He actually was able to also contribute 4 sacks on the year, as well as 2 QB hits and 19 QB hurries, which is not too bad from the interior. Played in the Shrine Bowl, and he's an ideal fit as a run-stuffing nose tackle. You know, you had mentioned earlier one of the signings the Bears made, and it's like a one-year deal, but you still kind of need that run-stuffer potentially of the future, and that he could be it, especially in this later round. Aligns as a 0-1 technique for this for his defense. Big body rusher, very good upper body strength, strong and stout, strong tackler, good power in his hands. He can anchor, shed, and chase. Unfortunately, he's a bit too often stonewalled at the line, and there's room for growth in terms of his development. He's not the most technically sound prospect, especially with his hands, but you know, improving this will help him shorten his rust process and pressure opposing quarterbacks. Bit of a project, but definitely someone who can help you immediately stopping the run. Brad with round five, pick 151. Actually, this guy is someone I love, and I have not been able to mock him yet.
Oh, well, there you go. I stole him from me. Yeah, so a guy that I honestly started watching a couple days ago, there's been all this buzz about he could be maybe the earliest taken player that did not get invited to the combine in a couple of years. So been a bit of a snub. You throw on his tape. For me, it's him pulling. It's him out in space. I mean, he just wants to pancake everything in his way. And it's a fun watch. He is obviously an older player. He was a fifth year at NC State this past year, but I think it served him well. you know, it's just a classic, like, if you're looking for an outside zone guard, I think that, you know, this is the type of guy you're looking for.
Yeah, especially at this place. I mean, he's someone that I think you could plug in. He'll go to camp and he'll actually challenge for a starting spot against someone, which is crazy. This is what Danny would have had. Round five, pick 170. He was going to take this individual here. My computer is very slow loading. Jalen Redmond, defensive interior. Oklahoma, yeah. Thank you. I don't know why it's going so slow. I don't know anything about him. Do you?
Not a thing.
All right, we're moving on. All right, hopefully you know about this person. Round six, pick 198, Will Mallory, tight end out of Miami.
Yes. So, again, we talked about tight end. It's just this loaded class. Mallory is a guy that after the catch that has legit speed, was able to beat defensive backs in the ACC with the ball in his hands. Decent stiff arm, can kind of throw some guys off him. I mean, the picture there kind of says it all. He could be better, honestly, at contested catches. Not bad, but it's not, you know, where you'd hope it to be because he is a big, really talented, really good athlete. But I still did like him down in the red area on more of, like, quick outs and screens and you know, like just quick inbreakers. You know, he could win a lot of different areas. But, yeah, I mean, just a really, really athletic guy, kind of the opposite to the Cole Kmet, where, like, I don't think he does a lot of the dirty work and a lot of the important aspects of tight end play particularly well. But if you want to break off a big gainer up the seam, that is where you're getting out of Will Mallory.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, the Bears have missed a little bit from the tight end position. Cole started to do it last year. Definitely had some falling off on it. But he's not going to come in. First of all, tight end takes a little while to get really engrossed in the NFL. We see them coming in around year three, year four is where they start to take off a little bit, right? Of course, when you got to figure out if you're going to pay him. And he's also not going to contribute much in the blocking game. But that's where you're hoping a Cole Kmet or Tanyan would, in theory, do that. And Will Mallory instead would run those seams for you. Oh, perfect. You and Danny had this player, round seven, pick 218. So it doesn't matter that he's not here because we have you to talk about him.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So, I thought maybe he'd already taken him before. I mean, look, Puka Nacua is a guy that is going to show up somewhere and be productive, but he's going to, like, his ceiling is probably a wide receiver three, wide receiver four. Not a great athlete, but a good football player, has the basketball background. So you'll hear about that. And it does show up. He is going to win a lot of contested catches down the field. I think he does a very good job of getting in a corner's hip pocket. Like, you can tell he's an experienced player. He has, you know, sharper route runner, knows how to manipulate leverage on defensive backs, can shake some tackles, can occasionally break some tackles. But yeah, like, is he going to be able to get off the line and press at the NFL level? Probably not. Is he super fast, super quick to just, just create separation early, regardless if it's press or off coverage? Not really. But just a good football player.
And that's, again, that's what you're looking for in these rounds. Just someone who can get out there and their number is called. It's like, oh yeah, you can run the route we need. Great. Perfect.
Yep.
So, surprisingly enough, we shared this player as well. I took him at 218. You had him at 237. We got Aubrey Miller out of Jackson State. Brad, what are your thoughts on Aubrey?
Yep. So at this point, like we're talking about, you're really just taking shots. I do think you'd be good on special teams, because that's at this point where you're looking for, a good athlete. He's kind of, I might say he's like too much of a throwback, but he is definitely, he's not like too small. But I think in today's game, he could make sense as an undersized off-ball linebacker. Has the quicks, I think, can cover fairly well. But yeah, for me, it was kind of looking at it as just like a gunner and a guy that would play well on teams, most of all.
Yeah, I think he fits that special teams role perfect. I mean, he is a little smaller for today's NFL. I mean, 6'2", 229. Not exact. He can do the Mike or the Will. Because he's got a lot of instincts, which is great. The problem is he's a little on the slower side, again, for kind of today. I mean, he ran a 4.85 40, which puts him in the 15th percentile, so not exactly a zoomer. He also lacks some of the fluidity and speed to turn and run with tight ends in coverage, so he would have to be a two-down back, potentially play in some zone-heavy schemes if, he is going to do some snaps for you on defense. But like I said, he does read and react really well. He's got pretty violent hands and can break away and disengage from blockers. And he takes really good tackle angles as well and has this innate sense for shooting gaps. So, if you need him to play a couple snaps for you, if you need him to play, an end of a game for you, this is a good pick because of that intelligence, QB intelligence he plays with. But at the same time, he's not going to be someone you want to rely on for sure.
That's where we're at, though.
All right. Danny had in round 7, pick 232, Tavius Robinson, edge out of Mississippi. Got nothing. Literally, I got nothing. Didn't know this player existed.
Less than nothing.
All right. Danny, again, rolling through this. Round 7, pick 259. We had, out of Pittsburgh, I always mess his name up. Is it Cervacia, Dennis?
I think it's Cervosha, but I don't know.
He's got one of the coolest names in the draft, and that's about the extent I have on him right now.
That's the full extent of the analysis. I have heard of him, but I haven't watched him yet, so I don't want to say anything dumb.
Yeah. We'll just have Danny do like a little blurb afterwards where we just throw this on at the end, defend his picks. But one of my final picks, round 7, pick 259, Jake Witt, Northern Michigan University. So actually, if you follow along with Bare Bones, I actually got to do an interview with Jake earlier in the week. So go check that out. It has a lot more in depth. He answers some really interesting points, but he originally played, first of all, he's 6'7", 302 pounds and plays tackle. Originally played basketball at Michigan Tech College, opted to change schools, Northern Michigan, due to wanting to change his major. So nothing sport related at all. But eventually he got the itch and wanting to go back to football and actually played wide receiver initially. Then he bulked up and moved to tight end. Then on October 30th, 2021, in a game against Ferris State, Northern Michigan had a ton of injuries and coaches came up to him at halftime and just threw him the number 65 jersey and said, "Hey, you're playing right tackle for us." He basically got 5 warm-up snaps trying to figure out how to do the footwork and everything, and then said, go ahead. So in this game, they were playing against a pretty solid pass rush against guys like Caleb Murphy, who's a guy who's going to get drafted. It gave up 0 sacks or pressures. Played there the rest of the season before he switched over to the left side. The thing that's really cool with him is how athletic he is at that 6'7" frame. I mean, he has a 9.8 relative athletic score. Ran a 4.89 40, 1.71 10-yard split, 37-inch vertical, broad jump of 10 feet 3 inches. That vertical would have tied BYU's Blake Clearuns for the positional top spot, and his broad jump would have been the best among all offensive linemen in the last 10 years. So, he also looks pretty darn good in the positional drills, according to scouts that were there. Now, again, he is raw. He only played 14 games for the offensive line. His tape is inconsistent. He's going to be a project. But if you want someone that has the athleticism and strength to play in a zone scheme and you have the time to, you know, have him sit and chill and groom them. You know, to me, he has that Lane Johnson-y kind of build and game to him.
That's a lofty one.
It is. If you can end up half of that, you're happy with your seventh.
Yeah, you're a great player.
So this is the picks as a whole. Not going to read through all these because that would be absolutely insane. But I'll post this later on Twitter. Y'all can vote who had the best one, who's the most interesting. You know, as a whole, I look at mine and I got a little edge happy. Ended up drafting three of them, but I also think that's a position you can't have enough of, and one that sucks for the Bears. So, you know, at the end of the day, throw them all in a room and let them compete, see who comes out on top. I mean, let's be real. They're not getting Paris Johnson and Jackson Smith and Jimba, but you know, this is one of our last mocks. So I had to try to draft them at some point. Brad, what do you think looking back at your draft right now?
Yeah. You know, you had to shoot the moon. I respect that. I also don't think they could take enough players along the trenches. I don't care if they come out with literally eight picks that are all in the trenches, and yeah, obviously not every single guy can make the team, or be an impact, you know, contributor throughout, but why not just throw a bunch of darts? And if you hit on half of them, then it's a success in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And because he's not here, we can say that Danny had the worst draft. He can't defend himself. So yeah,
that was rough. Out of Danny. Yeah.
I don't know why he did that. out of yours, I think, I mean, I know it's cheating because I already have picked him before, but I think my favorite pick is Yaya. I just really think he's going to be a real fun player.
Yeah, he's my crush so far. We'll see if that changes. I really have the next month to watch a lot of people. But so far, I've done three or four position groups, including Edge, and he is my current mock draft crush. So,
well, thanks for popping on, Brad. As you could tell, Danny and I like to talk a lot, so we always go a bit long. Appreciate you sticking with us. Great information you were able to give. If people want to follow you, find your information. I have it on the bottom of the screen here, but why don't you tell them where they could find you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thanks for having me as always. And always happy to yap with the fellas for an extended period of time about ball. So, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at @PFF_Brad. And I'm putting out a lot of content at PFF.com all through up until the draft.
And well, one other thing I want to highlight, you know, y'all put out a lot of great info, specifically you projecting, right, with free agency when that just went out, like what you think contracts, years are going to look like. You nailed some of those. So some of those were just so spot on. So if you're looking to try to figure out going into next year, you know, or even technically the rest of this year, there's still people to be signed, where some of these people slot in. I mean, Brad's the one to go to for that. It's pretty impressive.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Yeah, well, again, thanks for coming on. But, you know, that's all we got for tonight. Bear down, everybody.